Tommy.
Hey, guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hi, this is Diamond Salivary.
Hey, everybody, this is Joe L.T.J. Dirksen.
Hey, guys, this is Jason Nassi McDonald.
Hey, everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Full Contact Fighter Radio, that is the name of the program, and my name is Kelsey Mowat. Joining us right now is Brendan Lear, and Brendan, you weren't around for the last show, and the fans seem to love it, buddy.
What?
Nah, I'm just kidding. Did you listen to the last show? I gave you a bit of a hard time at the beginning. Did you catch that?
I heard.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of punking me a little bit, seeing as I wasn't around to defend myself.
Yeah. Well.
But I'm glad that the legions of listeners of our show really really stepped in on my defense, and I think it went the bank of Full Contact Fighter web servers, didn't they actually crash?
Yeah.
The overflow of email defending me?
Yeah, it was, you know, you're pretty popular, man. You're really popular.
Yeah, I think they thought it was a virus attack at first. You know, it was one of those massive attacks overwhelming the servers, but it was actually a massive outcry, which is nice. So thanks to all of you who wrote in my defense.
Yeah, so actually, I was at the Elite FC on Friday night in Vancouver, and they had my spot reserved for me, and it had my name, just said Kelsey, Full Contact Fighter. And I did have a couple of people came by, a couple mentioned as well, that they knew about the show. But and someone even said to me that was wondering if you were even on the show anymore. He couldn't remember your name, but he was like, yeah, is that other dude even on the show anymore? I was like, sadly, yes. Yeah, I'm like, he'll be back next week. But, yeah.
That's my favorite. You know, it's funny because there's a few internet radio shows out, and all these guys have personalities. And it's always hilarious whenever I read emails or anything that people talk about our show. We are known only as those guys.
Yeah. Those Canadian guys.
So, I guess we have to be, I don't know, is it good cop, bad cop? I'm not sure. This has all sort of been done, so.
Yeah, I think that you just keep going with the flow, man. It's people are starting to tune in, and we're getting some good feedback. So I think we stay on course.
All right, stay the course. We will stay the course.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of that, it's going to be another good show. We've got Mac Danzig's coming on the program. He fought this past weekend in Calgary, the Canadian or King of the Cage, world lightweight champion, and also going to have Joey Villasenor on the program, which was just announced, I think it was yesterday maybe it was announced formally by Pride, that he'll be fighting Robbie Lawler on the upcoming October 21st card, the Pride debut in the States. So a couple guys coming on the program who, you know, aren't necessarily household names per se in mixed martial arts in North America, but definitely are on the verge. And I guess, you know, for the informed mixed martial arts fans, very familiar names.
It's shaping up to be a nice little card, that Pride card.
Yeah,
sure. It's one of those cards that could be profoundly disappointing or pleasantly surprising.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. Ultimate Fight Night, or UFC Fight Night, whatever it's called now, next week. And then as well, you know, UFC next Saturday with Anderson Silva versus Rich Franklin. And then right around the corner, you've got Pride, so it's going to be a couple big shows, a few big shows in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, we have this weekend off, I think. I'm going on holiday, and there'll be no fighting to watch at all. So I guess I'll spend the weekend collecting bottles in order to pay for the pay-per-views, I guess, this month.
Yeah, it's going to be that for sure is going to be a pricey month on the cable pay-per-view side of things. All right, on that note, we're going to bring Joey Villasenor on the program. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit bodogfight.com for more details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With a Full Contact Fighter shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have.
Now open is the FCF Sticker and Banner Shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF Shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans. You listen to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
All right, I finally got some technical difficulties out of the way, and finally Mr. Joey Villasenor can join us here on Full Contact Fighter Radio. Joey, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing good, man. I'm just relaxing. I just got done with the hard workout with some of my boys, and just relaxing and waiting for the next training session tonight.
Now, of course, it's just been announced that Joey's going to be fighting Robbie Lawler in the upcoming October 21st Pride, the card, the first American card for Pride. And, Joey, how did this come about? Were you know that you're going to be fighting on this upcoming American card, or is this something relatively new for you as well?
Well, as most people know, Pride is notorious for, announcing fights 3 weeks before. But I was kind of rumored to, from my Bushido fight, I was kind of rumored since then that I might get this shot. So at about 6 weeks out, I started, pushing it and training with my boys. You know, they're getting ready right now. Rashad just got done. Nate Marquardt on the 10th, and then Keith Jardy on the 14th. So we all, I just jumped in there and was kind of just waiting and waiting, and then it came about. So I'm pretty far along in my training.
Clearly see where Pride's going with this fight. I mean, it's their American debut, and they've got two exciting fighters like stand up and go at it. You've seen Robbie fight, obviously, numerous times. Joey, what can we expect as fans? Are you looking to stand and bang with him and see where you're at, or what's the game plan going against Robbie?
Well, right now we're still, watching film, diagnosing, and we're putting together a game plan that I hope really works, and I'm sure there's going to be some bombs, and I'm sure that there's going to be a couple of takedowns. I mean, they happen in every fight, so it's just a matter of pushing it and who's in the dominant position, and so that's where we're at right now.
Now, you said you were going over some tape. Did you see Robbie's last fight against Jason Mayhem Miller?
Yeah, I sure did, man. I got to watch that fight. Lawler was really close to, beating him, upsetting him. People, were thinking Miller all the way, but Robbie showed his toughness and his strong hands, and I thought it was really close to being stopped. If it wasn't in Hawaii and there weren't so many Mayhem Miller fans, I think that Robbie could have retained his belt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly I can understand that you don't want to go into particulars about your game plan. You guys, as you mentioned, are still figuring that out. But, I mean, from watching Robbie, are you still going with the contention that his greatest asset is in his punching power?
Oh, of course. Yeah. With every, every win's important, and especially on that stage. So, we want to take him out of his element, and I think we might want to put him on his back. I think he's gonna have to worry about my shooting, my shots, and just kind of mix it up, hopefully make him worried enough to being on his back, because I think that my grappling is underestimated. But when you look at the camp I come from, grappling is a strong point of ours, so we might have to, get him there. So it's just all a matter of what happens during the fight. You can plan so much, things out, and they don't go as planned, so we just got to fill it out and go with it.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Ryo Chonin fight in Bushido in just a minute, but first, for some people maybe out there who didn't get a chance to see your last fight or hear too much about it against John Kronk, you won by TKO in King of the Cage. Maybe just tell us quickly about that fight and what were your thoughts on it?
Well, I trained to get back on the winning row again, and I was kind of disappointed in Kronk's performance. I just wanted to, get some good workout time in there. I'll take a win anyway, don't get me wrong, but he was real defensive, and he just really didn't give me so many openings, and it kind of made for a lackluster performance. My opponent didn't want to open up, so it made for me trying to pick my shots on a defensive opponent, and But I landed up with the TKO, and I'll take that and run with it. So on to the next, you know?
Yeah. With the fight with Ryo in Bushido, you know, you had the split decision loss there, and obviously anytime you have a split decision, you're going to have numerous people who thought you won that fight. What are your thoughts looking back on that? Did you still maintain that you won that fight, Joey? And what would you have done differently against a guy like Chonin now looking back?
Well, you know, of course, you know, it was our first time there, and I felt that I created enough damage, and I thought that I was the more active fighter. And I understand going into a fight like that, you're going to have to deal with these home-type decisions, but I take nothing away from Pride and or Chonin and the organization and the judges. You know, I left it up to the judges. I tried finishing there at the end, and I thought I did good enough to get the win. But I would have done some things differently. I think we overestimated his grappling, and I should have stayed on top a little bit more rather than letting him get back to his feet. I should have ground and pound, which is one of my assets, a lot more. And actually working in the ring with Pride Rules for the first time, it's quite an experience, you know. And I'm just glad that we got the chance to look at the film and see what we can better perform. And I think this next bout, we'll see that.
You know, outside of the strategic aspect of your Pride debut, I mean, what was that like for you, man? I mean, the debut for yourself on the big show?
Yeah, you know, it was great, man. It was exciting. I was more nervous at the press conference than I was for the damn fight itself. When it comes down to fight, I like to be, I'm really relaxed. I enjoy it and I appreciate it, you know, but when the first punch is thrown, there's nobody around. It's just, it's tunnel vision, and it's to me and him, you know, and the voices of my coaches, you know. So all those nerves and everything go away. So I wasn't nervous at all, you know. I had a hard weight cutting, that was for sure. Dropping an extra 4 pounds is kind of pushing it, and it kind of hurt me a little bit. But I thought that we came out and we showed a lot of people what we're capable of, and the sky's the limit, I hope, you know.
Now, before that, you had pulled off 15 wins in a row, and in this day and age of mixed martial arts, those kind of streaks are becoming increasingly rare and rare. There's so much great talent out there and so many ways to lose in MMA. I mean, we're not talking like boxing, you know, there's so many different ways to lose. And you had wins in that streak over such notables as Jorge Santiago, Brendan Seguin, Art Santori. I mean, what is it like for yourself? What's the mindset when you're going on a big streak like that, and then finally you do lose one? Is it almost a sense of relief? Does it become, you know, almost a daunting task to try to string together, you know, like you had 15 wins in a row?
Oh yeah, man. I mean, when I got up to like 7 or 8, you know, I was like, wow, you know, when's it going to happen and how's it going to happen, you know? And the way I lost to Chonin, I'll take that. I'll take it and I'll accept it and I'll learn from it, you know, but it wasn't a knockout and it wasn't a submission. So, you know, I feel like I'm getting better every time, but it kind of took the monkey off my back. You know what I'm saying? It's something that I can get back in there and try to create another one, but it kind of took that monkey off my back and take some questions out of my mind. But I could be riding 17 straight right now if it wasn't for one judge.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's unheard of. And these things happen. But I'm just excited and glad to finally get the opportunity to compete with the best. Compete at the best, you know, with these organizations and finally get my name out there and the respect that I need.
Now, that kind of segues into my next question, and taking nothing away from the King of the Cage organization, you know, something that an organization has really built up mixed martial arts both in the U.S. and now up here in Canada. But we've had Mac Danzig on the show before, a couple before his previous fight, and then he just fought this weekend, and we're going to be talking to him in a little bit as well. But, you know, Mac is one of those guys that has an exclusive King of the Cage contract. He's had some negotiations with him, trying to, you know, possibly fighting in Pride. Nothing's worked out at this point. What is your contract situation, and are you exclusive to the King of the Cage? And I mean, obviously, they've granted you permission to fight in Pride, but do you have an exclusive contract to King of the Cage as well?
No, we're not exclusive. You know, we do have an agreement with each other, and it's flexible. You know, I think Terry understands where I'm going in the future and just wants to be a part of it, you know. And you know, I can't take nothing away from him. They helped me out tremendously getting my name out there, for as much as it's gotten out there, you know. I'm known as the KOTC champ. So, you know, it's really flexible, and Terry is willing to work with us, you know, and I think it's the smart thing. I mean, if I go on to bigger and better things, what does that say about his organization? Mm-hmm. And vice versa, you know, and what it's done for me. So right now we're just scratching each other's back, and you know, I'm maintaining that belt until further notice, you know, and right now I'm just pleased to be in the position I'm in right now, and hopefully, you know, I can pull off a nice win and further benefit KOTC and myself.
Now you're going to be part of, you know, what many are saying is, you know, shaping up to be a great rivalry, promotional rivalry between the UFC and Pride, the world's two biggest mixed martial arts organizations, or arguably the world's two biggest organizations. What is it like for you being part of that Pride, the first Pride in the States?
Oh, man, it's tremendous. It's huge. You know, I mean, I've got five teammates fighting the UFC, you know, and, you know, I've been waiting for this opportunity to get into Pride and expose myself, you know, and, you know, I take nothing away from either of them. You know, I love them both equally. They're doing so much for the sport. I think it's great for the athletes that Pride has come into town, because hopefully, you know, the pay scale will rise a little bit, and the competitiveness will rise a little bit. I mean, I think we need a little bit of that smack talking that Pride and UFC is doing with each other. I just, you know, the only thing is I don't want people to really, you know, I mean, I'm a part of a fighting team, a fighting gym, and I don't want to have to feel, you know, animosity with my teammates or with, because of the organizations that we fight with. You know, that's my only concern. And I know that me and my brothers will never do that or feel that way, but you know, I just hope that nobody ever really judges us by our decisions, because all we're trying to do is make a living and be honest people, you know.
Yeah. Well, my last question for you, Joey, has to deal with your teammates, Team Jackson. And do you kind of feel, you know, a lot of people would say that it only seems that kind of recently the team is receiving its due, and maybe it's not even receiving its what it really deserves as far as credit-wise. People typically talk about the Team Miletich, you know, American Top Team, Team Quest. And yet, you guys, if you look at your team over the last year, 2 years, tremendous success, Rashad Evans, yourself, Keith Jardine, Diego. Do you finally feel that the team's getting the credit that it deserves, or is this still, you know, maybe you guys are flying a little under the radar still?
Oh, man, we appreciate any kind of response we get, but we're flying under the radar, and you know what? We love that. We're that little team from Albuquerque, New Mexico that nobody even knows about, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, out here in Albuquerque, people are like, whoa, there's Keith Jardine and Nate Marquardt. They don't realize that we train here, you know what I'm saying? They're like, whoa, they don't listen to the TV when they announce us from Albuquerque, you know? But we have quite a following out here, and Diego's just demolishing win, and Rashad's demolishing win, and Keith's just straight out toughness and never give up attitude, you know, and you know, Nate Marquardt's just fluidity, and I mean, we've got one hell of a team, and the fans might not know about us as much, but I'll guarantee you that them other teams are watching us. Right, I think statistically, out of all teams in the world, we're the number one ranked team for win-loss percentage, statistically. But I mean, who looks at that? Nobody.
Yeah.
They just want to hear a name. So I think that my coach deserves Coach of the Year honors just for what we've done this past year and where we're going, you know. And I mean, we're excited, man. We're that little team, that little engine that could out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, you know. And we're some tough SOBs, man. And I think that people are gonna realize soon enough that you know, that we'll be here and we're gonna be here to stay.
Anytime I've heard Greg Jackson talk on the radio, or anytime I've spoken to him, the guy is just always hyped. He's always full of energy. He's such a nice guy. Is that the way he is all the time, or do the media just always catch him on a good day?
Oh, he's like that all the time, man. The guy has the biggest heart, and if your leader isn't humbled, then it shows in your game. You know, I like to think of us as the most respectable, humble team out there, you know, and we've got some great coaches, and we've got some great athletes, and we're a big family, and we're a big old team, you know, and our chemistry it's phenomenal. We've had people come from different camps coming down here, and they just can't believe the chemistry that we have here. We're a family, you know. We have dinners here, dinners there, and going out to camping, and I mean, we do everything together, you know, and as every good camp should, you know, you create a chemistry. And Mr. Greg Jackson is just Yoda with jujitsu, man. You know, he's just he's incredible, man. We're doing some new stuff, cutting edge stuff that I haven't seen out there. All the film I've watched, I haven't seen out there, and they're small little details that make a big difference in a fight. So, you know, I mean, we're cutting edge, and all the praise to my coaches, man, and my teammates.
Joey, appreciate taking some time out of your busy schedule, and thanks for coming on the show.
No problem, man. I appreciate it, brother.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees nonstop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Mr. Mac Danzig joins us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio, fresh off his victory at King of the Cage in Calgary this past weekend, a unanimous decision victory over John Mallow. Mac's 12th win in a row, and for those people who didn't hear too much about the fight, Mac, maybe fill us in on what happened and what were your thoughts?
Well, I knew that the guy was going to be really tough. You know, he spent some time at Miletich training up there, and was training with Matt and Jens and Spencer up there. And looking at his record, you might say, oh, well, you know, he's lost to some, you know, guys like Thomas Schulte, who, you know, is a decent fighter. He lost to Alberto Crane. But he took 2 years off, I guess, to concentrate on some personal stuff or whatever. I talked to him after the fight. He told me he took 2 years off, and that when he came, since he's come back, he had won four in a row until he ran into me Friday night. So, he's a tough guy. What happened was, he was really trying to work a ground game with me. I guess he wrestled at Michigan State, I heard, or something like that. And he was able to get me to the ground. And once he got me there, I guess everybody's seen tapes of me fighting. I didn't really get to hardly study anything on him, but he was able to take me down and keep me down against the fence. And anyone who's seen tape of me fight knows that my whole game is using the fence to get back up, whereas other people lay in their guard and try to circle away from the fence so their head isn't caught down there. I like to be near the fence because I just use it to stand back up. But he was really preventing that well. And the only thing was, you know, once I was able to get out of those situations where he was on top, I really pounded him out. I don't think I've punched somebody in the face that many times in one fight. And I could kind of feel, you know, him wearing down every time I, you know, landed a few hard punches. But he was very tough and very strong. Physically speaking, he's probably one of the strongest guys I've ever fought at 155. And, it was a good fight overall. It was technical and everything, but I'm not happy with my performance. I felt like I should have been able to finish him. When in the third round, he was very tired too, and he was a sitting duck standing, and he was throwing really slow punches. And instead of keeping him at the end of my punches and setting up a knockout, I decided to lunge in with you know, like a knockout combination. And of course, whenever you do that, it's easy for the guy to get in on you and take you down. So that's kind of what was happening. And, you know, you live and learn, and I've had better performances, but, you know, I've been fighting and training really hard a lot lately. So, a little burnout, I think. I think that might have some distance, but take nothing away from him. I mean, he took me a distance.
Mac, speaking of what's in store for you, what's in store for you?
Well, that's the thing. I'm trying to work something out with the promoter here at King of the Cage. I'm under contract to King of the Cage. I can't. It's an exclusive contract. You know, I've been offered so much other stuff right now, and it's not anything that I can really do. You know, I try to stay diplomatic about the whole thing because I'm in a situation where, you know, I'm at the mercy of King of the Cage right now, and trying to work something out where I go to the biggest show in the U.S., but not sure if that's going to happen or not. Unfortunately, I would like to talk more about it, but unfortunately, it's not really anything that I can get into because, you know.
How many more fights do you have left on your contract?
Well, my contract is up in it's up in February, so it's not really a set number of fights. It's more of a time sort of thing. So
right.
Basically, I mean, also I've been offered Bushido through King of the Cage, and that may be something that I have to end up taking because that's a very good opportunity as well. So there's a whole lot of things on the table right now, but unfortunately I can't really say what's going to happen. Everybody keeps asking me, like, when are you going to fight in this show? When are you going to fight in this show? And I'm kind of stuck with what I got right now. So.
Well, you fought a couple times now in Canada, and you know, I think it's safe to say because of your background in King of the Cage in the States, you're probably perhaps more well-known down in the States. It seems like you see some media, MMA media coverage of yourself, particularly from the American angle. Do you find up here in Canada now, you know, having fought a couple times and the fact that you are the King of the Cage lightweight champ, world lightweight champion, do you, in Canada, in these appearances, do you have people cognizant of this and the fact that you're in these main events? Are the Canadian fans starting to realize who you are?
Yeah, you know, like the hardcore fans in Canada and stuff, like it seems to me like people actually know me better in Canada when I go up there and fight, and I get more of a response from, you know, the fans and people wanting to talk to me and everything. A lot of people know who I am, so that's really good. The only thing that's unfortunate about the shows up in Canada, like we were speaking about earlier, is just the fact that there's no MMA media coverage. They've got, for example, the show that I just fought on, the production is great, you know, especially for a King of the Cage show, you know, great camera work, it was a good venue, you know, they do their production really well, and they have all the local media there, like the local papers and the news and that sort of thing, but there's virtually no MMA media coverage. I don't really understand why, but you know, that's something that they're lacking a little bit, and a lot of my friends have been texting me and emailing me and been like, you know, what's going on? What happened with your fight? I have no idea. You know, it's October 3rd, and there's no results posted anywhere. So it's a double-edged sword with them. They put on a really good show, but not a lot of people get to know about it. But in answer to your question, yeah, the local MMA fans, it's pretty cool. It's like I have a second home up there in Canada because they really like me and fought the main event a couple times up in Canada now, and so it's a good response from them. It feels good.
Well, it was a busy, extremely busy weekend for Canadian mixed martial arts. There's four events this weekend, and you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as even researching this interview, it was tough to find any info on the Calgary show. There was a show in Vancouver, which I was lucky to attend, and then there was the big TKO event in Quebec. Montreal on the same night, and then as well the following night in Lethbridge, Alberta, at Rumble in the Cage. So it was a busy weekend, but yeah, you're right. It was the only thing, you know, I read from a few different people had posted that the fight in Calgary, I think it was fans posting, and said that your fight with Mallow had been a really great ground display, and that you had won, but as far as actual results, it was tough sledding.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why that's the case with them. You know, Keith Crawford, he was co-promoting it up there with Ken, and like we said, I think he brought in a little bit more of the MMA media, or you know, at least maybe releasing the results or something online. I know he would do at least that, but. You know, the promoter Ken is a really good guy. He's actually a very good promoter. I think that's just the one area that they're lacking. And if they're able to put that together, it's really a top notch show. You know, it's something that I'm happy to be a part of up there. And you know, the production, like I said, is high. So it's a good show. It's just that they've got it. They've got to talk to the MMA media, or you know, it's not gonna last. So.
Yeah, well, from Ken Kopchus, who you're referring to, he's the main guy behind King of the Cage Canada now, and from the one experience when I still lived in Alberta and I went to a show in Calgary, Joe Dirksen fought Brendan Seguin in the main event. Ken treated me really well, and pretty much octagon side seats. So.
He's a good guy, and he puts together a really good show. It's just. Yeah, that's the one area that they don't really get what they're liking.
Matt, King of the Cage is one of the oldest MMA promotions, you're obviously intimately familiar with them. But now that you see other promotions starting up in the U.S. and promotions in Japan, what do you see as the direction of King of the Cage in terms of the way they do business and their profit model? Is it going to be maintain the course and blast out pay-per-views and make money off that, or do you see them changing in reaction to all the new promotions that are rising up in North America?
See, that's kind of a hard question to answer. The problem there is that, you know, King of the Cage has a really big name. You know, Terry has built up the organization over a period of years now, and it's a pretty big name, but it's hard to say where King of the Cage fits in with all the other organizations as far as it being a sporting event. The main problem that I see there, and I don't mind saying this, I don't care if people get mad at me or whatever, but the problem is there's so many King of the Cage events throughout the U.S. each year, and that's the way that they make their money. They have a whole lot of events. They usually always, you know, sell a pretty good number of tickets. But the problem is it becomes watered down when you have that many events, and let's say you have three or four events in a row with nothing but local guys, and no one really knows who they are or anything, and it's just, you know, just some free-for-all fights. And then you have your, you know, big cards with you know, Uriah Faber and Dia Senor and, you know, like all the good fighters. People haven't been really receptive of that lately, I don't think. You know, there was once a time when King of the Cage had John Alessio, Dennis Hallman, Ronald Jeune, Shoni Carter, Romy Arum, you know, all those guys are all actively competing. Yeah, Dean Lister, Joe Stevenson, you know, all those guys. Yeah, and now it's like gotten to the point where there's just, the sport is blowing up so big, and there's so many other organizations out there pulling in all the talent that, you know, unfortunately, I may not feel this way, but a lot of people, when they talk to me, feel that the King of the Cage isn't the same legitimate organization that it was before, and, you know, that can be debated, but, you know, I don't think King of the Cage will ever go away. I think it's too strong of a name, and, you know, when they put on good shows, they do put on good shows, and...
It seems to me almost that they almost have become like a franchise organization where, you know, you sort of buy the the way the promotion is done, and there seems to be less and less of a centralized core of fighters and matchmakers and things like that. That everyone sort of has their own thing with the brand.
Right. I would absolutely have to agree with you there. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I would have to say, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword on the American side of things. They do have quite a few shows, but up here in Canada, it's been, I think, largely welcome just for the fact that it's, you know, up here in Canada, we don't have as many shows as down in the States. So it has, from a grassroots perspective, given a lot of the local fighters an opportunity.
Right.
If you look at the show coming up in Vernon, you got a lot of guys from Team Toshido, which is out of Kelowna, British Columbia, who haven't, you know, they do have quite a few number of fighters, but finally they're actually getting some sort of, like, headline coverage as far as being in some of the major fights in that card in Vernon. So
the Jason Ireland versus Mario Stapel fight should be pretty interesting. I'm not sure what weight they're fighting at. I'm pretty sure they're fighting at 55.
I think so.
It wouldn't be good for Jason if he went ahead and fought 70, because he's more of a natural 55er. But that's actually a really good fight. Not a lot of people know about Mario Stapel, but he's from Germany. He's pretty tough, so. Should be interesting to see if Ireland's motivated. I think he'll win though.
Kels. Now I'm gonna have to put the big resurgence of 155 in North America, and it seems like that weight division is now catching on, and people are becoming more enthused with the entertainment and the skill that 155ers display. Are you sort of salivating to get to fight some of the bigger names at 155?
Oh, definitely. I mean, watching this last UFC, there's a couple guys who I'd love to compete against. You know, the talent pool is really high. You know, you've got really good guys like Roger Huerta in there, and Tyson Griffin. He's another one just got thrown in the mix, and you've got a lot of good 155ers out there, and you know, this is a tough weight class. You know, for me, I feel like I'm doing pretty well, and I'm progressing, and I'm winning all my fights, and I'm going to continue to do that. But this is one of those weight classes where, you know, if somebody loses, it's not always that big a deal, because the talent is just so high. I feel like 55 and 170 are the two toughest weight classes out there right now. And we were watching just a year ago, it was almost exclusively dominated by what was going on in Bushido. People were looking at Gomi and Joachim Hansen and Caligiuri as, you know, far away the absolute best guys at that lightweight. And now it's like, with the UFC putting on a lightweight, it's opening everyone's eyes that, hey, there's a lot of good 155ers out there. So
I
can't wait to jump in.
You weren't surprised to see Jens lose then?
I was very surprised to see Jens lose. I think they're putting in guys to build up other fighters, and you know, we saw that with Tyson Griffin and his opponent, and you know, they're putting in people to build people up, and it doesn't always work that way. You know, you give a guy like Joe Lazon a shot, And he's going to take those guys are the most dangerous guys, the underdogs who, you know, he really had nothing to lose. And what's crazy about it is it's not like he just, you know, closed his eyes and threw a punch and knocked him out. He was dominating the whole fight up until then. He was taking Jens down, wouldn't let him back up. When Jens finally did get back up, he threw a knee, then that left hook, and, you know, that was the beginning of the end. And, you know, I was definitely surprised to see that, but you know, anything can happen when you put two bodies in there. So,
do you fear something like that happening to yourself? Obviously, King of the Cage isn't going to have any bigger names than you to compete against. Is that your worst fear? Is that when you're ready to go somewhere else, some young punk's going to come up and knock you out? You fight
well,
before you leave?
You know what? I'm not worried about it. If something like that happened, I would just get right back on the horse afterwards. You know, I'm not too worried about that. I don't see it happening, but that's not something I think about. You know, if somebody is able to put me down, then that's what they do. But it's not going to be easy. I understand what you're saying, though. It would definitely suck to take a loss, you know, before I get a chance to get into a bigger show. But I think with my record and everything, I've proven that I'm a legitimate fighter. And
there's rumors that Kelsey's coming down from 225, so you got to watch out.
You know what? I don't want none of that, man.
Yeah,
I don't know if I can hang.
I didn't realize that weighed 225, Brendan.
Oh man!
Just rumors, Kelsey. I haven't seen you in a couple months,
yeah.
But I heard you cut down.
Yeah.
what you were saying though, that does suck. But the thing is, you know, there's a lot of good guys, you know, being thrown at me even in King of the Cage. Like, I mean, if you look at like Buddy Clinton and John Mello, both those guys. You know, not a lot of people have even really heard of John Mello, but he, in my opinion, is just as good as half of some of the guys that they're putting in some of the fights in the UFC. And I'm not putting anyone down when I say that. I say that because John is a good fighter. So it is kind of hard. You know, people really might not look at him as a legitimate threat to someone who holds a title only because he's not fighting in the UFC, but he could, you know, he could have been Jamie Varner, you know, he could have been Joe Jordan, he could have been any of those guys. So I went three rounds with him, and I gotta tell you, he's a tough SOB, so
Mac,
yeah, that's the kind of guy that they're throwing at me.
So. I read that you were training with Team Tompkins before getting ready for this fight. When were you, was that training with them out in Ontario, or is that down in the States?
No, that was out in Ontario. Sean Tompkins actually flew myself and Gray Maynard out there. Gray Maynard's one of the up-and-coming guys that trains at Science right now, a really good wrestler. I think he's a three-time All-American. And we went up there, and that was a great experience. The training is really hard. It's no nonsense. You know, those guys, they get right down to business, and their warm-ups are harder than most people's workouts that I've been involved with, you know, so in some of the training camps that I've gone to. So, it was great. Sean Tompkins is a really good trainer. He knows his stand-up really well. And getting in there and sparring with those guys like Mark Hominick and Chris Rodesky, I mean, that was a really, really good experience for me. And I've got a relationship now, a good training relationship now with them, and when they're in LA, I'm definitely going to hook up with them and be part of the camp. And next time they have anything big coming up, I'm probably going to go back up to Ontario because that was very good training.
Were you brought up to help them work on their wrestling?
Yeah. I was up there. I was helping them work on their ground game, and at the same time, getting in all the work that I needed to prepare for my fight with John Mello, with all the sparring up there. And the sparring is hardcore up there, and it's really good also to be able to finally work with three really solid 155 pounders. Hominick is a 45 pounder, but he can fight at 55 as well. But to be able to go with guys my size like that it was really good too. So. Sam Stout's actually a lot better on the ground than what people give him credit for. You know, he made a little mistake against Florian, you know, and that can happen because he's not real experienced with the ground game. But his ground game is actually a lot better than what I thought it'd be. And he actually just won his fight by armbar. Yeah. So I think you'll be seeing a lot more of that from him because he's really strong and he understands the ground pretty good. So.
Brendan, you got anything else for Mac?
That's it. All I have to say is watch out for Kelsey.
All right. I'll keep my eye out for that.
Right.
I don't know what weight you're going to be dropping down to, but.
Yeah, 155 would be a stretch right now. That'd be a stretch.
Yeah.
Maybe 185. I could probably do 185.
I'll tell you what, I'm what, 4 days out for my flight, and 155 would be a stretch for me now, with the amount that I've been eating lately, so,
yeah,
that happens every time.
Brendan's
well, good luck to you, Mac.
Thank you very much, I appreciate that.
Yeah, and next time we talk to you, Mac, Brendan, I'm sure he'll have some other grandiose opponent lined up for you.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, take care, Mac, and all the best of luck.
All Okay, thank you very much. Take care, guys.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
Hey guys, Kelsey Mowat here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mowat must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Mowat before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, as we close up another episode, some interesting comments from both Mac Danzig and Joey Villasenor.
Yeah, both very well-spoken guys, and it's interesting their different impressions of being contract fighters for King of the Cage, and it'll be interesting to see what direction that organization takes, especially, you know, against the backdrop of what's happened recently on the MMA scenes.
Yeah, well, with Joey, I mean, he said that there are no, he has no, he can fight outside of King of the Cage. I mean, and that's obvious because he's, mm-hmm. he's fought for Pride, but he definitely was far more, you know, it didn't seem like it was such an issue as it was with Mac at all. In fact, mm-hmm. Joey was very complimentary towards King of the Cage. And not that Mac wasn't, but you could sense, you could hear some frustration with Mac as far as his ambitions to fight on bigger cards. And, you know, Joey was, you know, when he was reminiscing about his participation in Pride and how much that meant and his anticipation for his upcoming fight with Lawler, definitely you can see what, you know, fighting on the big stage against world-class fighters, what can it can do to a fighter's mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. And I think Danzig was probably very well taken care of when there was no 155 fights in North America to get. And, you know, he's showing a lot of class by biting down and fulfilling his contract.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other fight that was just announced for Pride is that card's really shaping up and coming together nicely. Nakamura is going to be fighting as well now against Marvin Eastman, which is kind of interesting, and depending on the state of Marvin's hand, because Marvin Eastman was supposed to fight in the Elite FC, which I attended on Friday, and in the main event against Vernon White, but due to a hand injury, and I saw Marvin there, and he had his hand bandaged up, and apparently the doctors hadn't even cleared him to fight, and now he's going to be fighting, I guess, in couple more weeks. I mean, I suppose a couple more weeks can do wonders, but
was it one of those injuries like Rodney Dangerfield in Caddyshack? Oh, my arm! Broken!
Well, you know, we laugh, but it's tough to say. I mean, I firmly believe, like, from talking to Rob Harris and, you know, they really want, of Elite FC, they really wanted Marvin to be able to fight. They spent a lot of money on advertising. They, you know, that was shaping up to be a great main event fight, Vernon White versus Marvin Eastman, who is their light heavyweight champion. Mm-hmm. He beat Travis Youth for the Elite FC Light Heavyweight Championship. And, you know, he had said that the doctors had left it up in the air until the final week, and then Marvin, you know, couldn't fight. It wasn't cleared by the doctors. So, you know, whether or not maybe this is an issue with Marvin's camp, and maybe they said, well, look, let's skip out on Elite and save the hand until Pride, or maybe the doctors, you know, just didn't clear him and he'll be ready to fight coming up in a couple of weeks. Who knows?
You know, fighters get hurt all the time in training, but you'd like to think that, you'd like to think that promoters are straight up and when they know their fighter's not going to fight, that they don't keep on promoting the show just to sort of sell tickets, and we certainly don't have any reason to believe that, but stranger things have happened in the world of MMA.
Well, I mean, you heard Sean Tompkins. He came on the show, and, you know, we're talking about Ivan Menjivar dropping out of the fight against Mark Komenek, and Sean had taken, you know, great offense to the fact that certain fans were, you know, hinting that perhaps they were in cahoots with TKO and that they knew full well that Ivan wasn't going to be taking that fight because of his obligations to K1, and, you know, Sean Tompkins came on our program last week and said, look, you know, that this is the nature of the fight game, and yes, it does happen sometimes. We all know that sometimes there's probably fights promoted that, you know, aren't likely going to happen. But in this case with Mark, you know, their contention was is that he was going to fight Ivan Menjivar, and I know Stefan Petrie has told me as well that was what they wanted to do, that Ivan had wanted to take both fights, and decided to drop out because of he felt that he wasn't going to be able to compete with Mark in the stand-up part of it, and that training for Cal Uno was just taking too much out of him. And then you look at, you know, this with Marvin Eastman, and, you know, I saw Marvin doing press. There was some local media here from Vancouver interviewing Marvin, and he was being forthright and open and honest about the fact that he would have liked to have fought. He would have liked to defend his title against someone like Vernon White. He was looking forward to the fight, but couldn't take it because of the hand injury.
And that's that's unfortunate. Hopefully, he obviously he's planning to make a big show for Pride. So we look forward to that, seeing Eastman fight again. And in the popular fans' imagination, the last we recall of Marvin Eastman, although he's fought a lot since, was that brutal evisceration at the hands of Vitor Belfort.
Was that before the Travis Lutter fight, though? Or is that after?
Oh, yeah.
I think Lutter might have been after.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, probably the worst cut ever in UFC history. So we'll see. We'll hopefully, Marvin has always been on the cusp of being the next big thing and the next big breakout fighter. I just can't, I can't really cheer for him because, he played, of course, for the Calgary Stampeders, who, one of the many mortal enemies of my beloved Saskatchewan Roughriders. So,
right. Now we're talking Canadian Football League. Yeah, well, Marvin's had a lot of success in the last couple of years. There's no question about it. And
people's mistakes haunt them through their whole lives, and you know, being a Stampeder is just one of those things.
Yeah, it's true.
What about the other big card? We've got actually a couple of big announcements. What about the other big Pride fight that's shaping up?
Which one are you referring to?
Well, I mean,
talking about Emelian
Akar versus Lawler. We haven't spoken about that.
Robbie Lawler versus.
You and I haven't spoken about that yet.
Joy Villasenor.
And that could be fireworks. You know, that card is looking really, really good, and I'm glad that Pride. You know, Pride is this. I have this real love-hate relationship with them because they make some really nice fights, and their card is shaping up to be really good. And then they pull Tyson out of the hat, and my impression of them goes right back in the toilet. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of the organization.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's definitely an edge to them with the sort of sensationalism that they like to do. But I think if you try to just stick to the card itself and look at, you know, Fedor Emelianenko versus Mark Coleman, you know, that to me is not the most interesting fight on that card. I mean, I think that Mark Coleman will be more competitive against Fedor than people think, that some people might think. I think it should be a more competitive fight, but I'm most excited about, you know, seeing Shogun versus Randleman. I think that'll be an interesting matchup. You know, seeing Josh Barnett's fight, Joey Villasenor versus Robbie Lawler. Yeah, it's definitely shaping up to be a good card.
I think Noasto Barnett is going to be a fight that has a potential to be a fantastic fight. And also, I know Barnett's on a huge roll right now. It could be a little bit of an upset there, I think, too. That's my.
Well,
that's
I think
it, but I don't want to tip my hand.
Well, yeah, I think we should wait until we got to make our picks. But I got to say, you know, Nastula, the only chance he's got is on the ground. From what I've seen, we'll leave that until, you know, the last week. I did want to talk a little bit about the Elite card that I was at. Victor Valimaki, who has been on the program, he's the Maximum Fighting Championship light heavyweight champion. He fought Vernon White. He stepped in against Vernon White as Marvin Eastman's replacement. And he won a unanimous decision victory over Vernon. It was a good fight. Vernon had Victor in a lot of trouble. Early on in the fight, he landed a huge right hand. I believe it was the punch that put Victor to the canvas. It was kind of one of those, you know, you slowly see the legs go out from him. And as he was going in, he started going down and started going for a shot in on Vernon, just trying to grab his legs, protect himself. And Vernon appeared to have landed a huge knee as well. And Victor came out of it. He still got the takedown and recovered and, you know, managed to get Vernon to the ropes for a lot of the fight, worked well from the clinch, took Vernon down a few times, landed some shots and punishment. At one point, I was actually kind of surprised. No, I shouldn't say kind of surprised. I didn't stop it, but he was on the verge of stoppage on behalf of Victor. He was giving Vernon a lot of trouble. Vernon was covering up quite well, but there was unanswered punches from Victor on top of Vernon for almost a minute, if not beyond that. So it was a good competitive fight. I know Vernon White in his corner appeared to be quite upset about the judge's decision, but you know, for Victor Valimaki, that's a big win, and you know, you got to look at this now. He slowly but surely is getting his name out beyond the Canadian borders, I would think, with a victory over Vernon White.
Yep, and I think that's a big fight to win for him, because that's a test against someone who has fought the best and done very well against the best. You know, we saw Vernon Tiger White's stick in there, a really tough fight against Chuck Liddell only a couple of years ago. And you always like to test yourself, you know, before he enters into the deep end of the pool for people who have been there. And if he can eke out a win against someone like Vernon Tiger White, that's a very reputable win to have on your resume.
Yeah, there's some other interesting fights on the card. Garrett Davis took on Miles Morolla. That was an interesting fight. Miles Morolla is a young fighter. Has come out of the Surrey area in Vancouver. He had a little bit of hype behind him. A lot of fans were there to see him fight. I haven't seen Miles fight before this, but looked like he had some pretty decent stand-up, and I know from his record he's got a bit of a rep for being a hard puncher. And it was a really good fight with Garrett Davis, who had won six fights in a row prior to this. He's a Mark Suarez, who is the instructor of Dennis Kang, jiu-jitsu instructor of Dennis Kang. He's a student of Mark Suarez, and that was a really entertaining fight. Garrett won the decision, unanimous decision victory in that fight. Blake Fredrickson won the Elite FC Lightweight Championship against George Cazamatis. Blake Fredrickson was on the program. He was taking some mean kicks from Cazamatis, who's quite the noted striker, comes from a school of Posner and Pankration, which is well known for their striking capabilities, and Blake weathered the storm and got the victory via an armbar. There was a lot of other action in Canada this weekend, and Mac Danzig had alluded to the fact that, and I wanted to get this kind of on the record, he sort of alluded to the fact that he thought that maybe the mixed martial arts media had not covered the event in Calgary enough. And, you know, I was thinking about it afterwards and thinking, you know, I as a mixed martial arts journalist should take part of the responsibility for that. But, you know, I also put this on last week's show too, is this weekend was extremely busy, and Mac Danzig definitely was the headliner on that Calgary show. And I think that Calgary show just kind of, unfortunately, not excusing it, but kind of got lost in the shuffle a little bit. You had the Elite FC with a pretty big main event until Marvin Eastman dropped out, but the second show in Vancouver in the P&E Agrodome, and then in particular the TKO card, which was held in Montreal, which had some huge names, a lot of UFC names competing, Mark Hominick, Sam Stout, yeah, a bunch of Team Tompkins guys fighting. So I think that card in Calgary maybe got lost in the shuffle a little bit. And from the sounds of it, the TKO card, Team Tompkins did really well. Sam Stout defeated Jay Estrada. Mark Hominick took out Samuel Guillet, so it looks like we'll have Mark Hominick against Hatsu Hioki.
And I think it'll be interesting. You see we're seeing a real groundswell of quite reputable fighters singing the praises of Team Tompkins, especially the discipline of the team as a whole, their cardio training, their stand-up training, the efforts of Tompkins himself to get in game, ground guys to work with this team, and it's definitely they've got to be mentioned with the elite teams in Canada for sure, if not the elite team, and we're getting a lot of good vibe about them for sure from people who really know what they're talking about. So it'll be interesting to see how those guys go, and this was the first TKO in a cage as well, so we've got to think that might have something to do with them coming into alignment in some more formal sense with the UFC. Certainly, they fed a lot of fighters to the UFC, so it'll be interesting to see if those relations formalize a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure, and definitely Team Tompkins has had a lot of success. Team Revolution on the West Coast, I think they went 6-0 that night, which is very impressive as well. So you've got a couple teams that are really, you see kind of a similar trend to what's happened in the States, whereas I think in Canada for a long time you had schools and everyone sort of stuck with their own school. Fighters come out of certain camps, and you might only have one or two fighters per school in each city, etc. And now you're starting to see that congregation, that groups of fighters getting together, like Team Tompkins. You see someone like Christoph Szczynski, who was originally from Winnipeg. He goes to train with Team Tompkins, adds an addition to their team. You got Team Revolution, where you've got guys like Coulter Gill and Blake Fredrickson, who weren't originally with Team Revolution, going to join Caleb Starnes, and Todd Gallenberg is another guy who came in, Tim Thurston, Tyler Jackson. So you're starting to see that just like in the States with American Top Team and Team Quest and Team Militage, where you've got all these fighters who are actually willing to move and relocate just to start training with those teams.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's indicative of team success, is the fact that they become a destination location. Obviously, Militage's team being the best example of that. You know, you have to be fairly dedicated to move. To move from the coast to the Midwest of the United States, and I guess you'd have to be fairly dedicated to move to Ontario, period, in Canada. So,
well, it'll be interesting to see what happens next for some of those guys. You know, Mark Hominick, he is supposed to fight Hatsu Yoki, but there were rumors, and Sean said that, you know, on the show last week, he mentioned that he wasn't even sure on where the rumor started, and he couldn't confirm anything, but that Mark might be fighting Joe Stevenson was a rumor in the upcoming UFCs. So that'll be interesting to see, you know, what the UFC has in store for someone like Mark Hominick, and then with Sam Stout, whether or not they have him back right away, considering he took O.J. Estrada by armbar, and it'll be interesting to see if those guys get back to the UFC, and if maybe Christoph Szczesny, who's been on a roll lately too, you know, if maybe he's in potential UFC heavyweight division participant.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the next TKO, and it sounded like the event was a nice, very well done, nice intimate event, even though it was in the Bell Center, which is a hockey arena. It sounds like it was all done very well, and you still wouldn't lose the intimacy of a local show with a massive audience. So I'll be interested to actually watch the show when we get the opportunity.
Well, Bert, on that note, we'll get out of here. Next show, we'll have to do our picks for the UFC Fight Night that's coming up next Tuesday. Tito Ortiz, Kent Shamrock, Jason McDonald, Ed Herman, Kendall Gross fighting, a bunch of guys. Some good fights on that card. So we'll have to do our picks and where I can retake the lead. Currently, we're tied 4-4. All right, man. You enjoy the next couple days and try to think about what new and innovative you can bring to the show for next time. That's your homework.
I'll do my best, and please, if you email the Full Contact Fighter website in support of me, please keep it to one email. And like I said, the servers took quite a bashing, and you know, the Commodore 64 doesn't crank like it used to. So,
right on, man, right on. Go Rough Riders.
Go Riders.